Good evening and welcome to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. Tonight we'll talk about the politics and the COVID-19 pandemic. Joining me is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yes, as we have seen in these several months of the COVID-19 pandemic, some people say it has brought out the true colors of African leadership, where leaders, where countries where the democracy, they seem to have handled the situation a bit different than those who are dictatorial tendencies, who seemed to take this chance to use the pandemic for their own gain. Let me begin with Vincent. How do you see the pandemic affecting the politics or vice versa?
Well, most certainly, one of the things that pandemic has done is to give those in power the more authority to act, more control. It has been an opportune time to take control of everything, in the pretext that that is what is needed to deal with this pandemic. So in quite a number of the countries, the opposition has been given even a little space to, express themselves freely, given again the fact that there is not as much of public interaction or rallies and so many activities have been stalled. So you find that in countries like Tanzania, for example, the only voice you had more prominently was that of the president, and he took control of everything and didn't want anybody to give an opposing view, because then you look like you're undermining him at the time when, we're dealing with a very threatening pandemic. We've seen situations like in Uganda where there was suspicion that while the president, Yoweri Museveni, seemed to be taking some serious measures to make sure that the disease, COVID-19, does not spread to the population. But some people saw a little bit of suspicious activity in relation to the political development in the country, where there were some hints that perhaps even the elections could be in jeopardy, because it would be crazy, as they say, it would be madness to hold an election in an environment like this. While it sounded like just a little suggestion, some people suspect that this is a kind of an attempt to take advantage of this, perhaps to hold on to power longer than it should be. So not in some other countries. I wouldn't say that every country has seen some escalation in the clamping down of the opposition or perhaps turning dictatorial, but I think for some they've seen this as an opportunity to consolidate power, because whenever there's a crisis, even here in the United States, it's an opportunity for the person in power to really consolidate their authority, and if somebody's not there to check them, they can overstep the constitutional mandate.
Suleiman, how do you see it?
Yeah, I agree with Vincent that the pandemic came at a time when we are having rising dictatorship on the continent. We have got a fragile political terrain in many countries where you have got established democracies. The pandemic was not a problem. The leadership in those countries sat with the institutions, both left and right, and they were able to come together. They saw it as a national crisis, not as a partisan political crisis. As a result, you will see that in many countries where there is a democratic leadership, even the nature of lockdown varied. For example, you find countries like Botswana, countries like Senegal, they even went ahead to consult the legal systems which they were going to use. You'll find some countries found that they had to enact emergencies, not simply giving dictatorship instructions from the president. So you'll find that many of these countries which are well organized, they had a state of emergencies, because that is what the law demands, because we are going to trample on the rights of the people. And if they were to conflict the rights of the people, it is only state of emergency which would trample on those rights. So countries like Ghana, they were forced to. Ivory Coast, they were forced to. Botswana, they were forced to. Here in South Africa, it has been very controversial, to the extent that they did not declare a state of emergency. But in the process, they have been taken to court, and the first judgment from them declared the regulations null and void against the Constitution, because they trampled on the rights of the people without declaring a state of emergency. So the reaction varies. Those were, as I'm saying, those who are democratic, the process has been smooth, everything has been well structured, transparent, and inclusive. Whereas in countries where we have got dictatorship, it meant a terrain where the political temperatures were rising high. So the leader, the dictators in those particular countries, saw it as a chance to take relief hiding under the coronavirus. That is why in those countries, very terrible regulations came up. The lockdowns were brutally implemented. There was a lot of trampling on the rights of the people, to the extent that even they are even compromising the issue of the elections in those particular countries which have been having those particular problems. So that is why I'm saying in countries which are dictatorship, the response has been dictatorial and it has had a lot of effect. Whereas with the democratic one, we can say it has been an organized one and a structured one.
I see. Vincent, this one, actually, what Mugula's point is exemplified in a region like East Africa, where you find Kenya took a very middle-of-the-road kind of situation and handled it properly. In Uganda, as Mugula says, people were even killed in trying to enforce the lockdown. In Tanzania, Magufuli's word is law. In Burundi, they had election in the middle of a pandemic. Rwanda was the same situation. Maybe the pandemic had gave them a roadmap.
I feel like there again, these are every country reacted differently. In every country, the government worked differently with the people. But I think some of the politicians saw this as an opportunity to just do whatever they want to do, because it gives them an excuse to claim that they need to have that control. And we saw, if you looked over to the United States, there was a lot of vibrant debates that has been going on. And of course, that kind of countered what was coming from the ruling party, for example. So when you look at countries like Burundi, countries like Uganda, Tanzania, you could see that the leadership there was seeing an opportunity to just plow ahead with their political agendas and also just, strengthen their positions and stamp their authority. But in countries where there was some, as we have said, a fair amount of democracy, I think they did see a togetherness. They did see a level of you can say a national agenda. For a moment, there was, in some of these countries like Kenya, I think there was that sense that we're in all this together, that we could die tomorrow. Because at the end of the day, look, the leadership came to the realization that this disease does not discriminate, and this disease does not have a cure in Europe or somewhere else. We are in it together. We don't act together properly at this time. We could all die. or many of us could die, including the leadership. So those words sense to see the kind of the seriousness of the disease took their eyes a little bit off the political shenanigans and focused on saving their fellow citizens and themselves, because this is the time where you could not just jet out to another country to get a cure. And so, but you see, for some other countries where it has always been the case where politicians don't really look ahead or care about what happens to the nation, they could have, they possibly saw an opportunity just to do what they always want to do, to use every opportunity as a political advantage thing.
I see. There's an example, for instance, in Uganda, where the opposition has been taken out of this. Civil society organizations are sidelined. Actually, some member of parliament was arrested for trying to help the people who are starving.
Yes.
Actually, on the whole, Douglas, in many of these dictatorial regimes, like that one in Uganda, Cameroon, Rwanda and others, there is a political crisis because the political roadmap is not even clear. While it was a national crisis, the leaders took it upon themselves as a partisan crisis. In the process, they are digging their hands into the national coffers. They are picking and dishing the way they want the funds of the nation. So the corruption is included in. They have taken all the powers. They do what they want. As a result, the countries themselves are going to suffer because they don't know what is going on, because the leaders have decided to do what they want. Any attempt to oppose them, of course, they are using the chance to lock the leadership down. In countries like Uganda, Rwanda, the opposition cannot talk, as the dissenter said. Tanzania, the opposition can't talk. Whereas the citizens in those countries were yearning for changes, now this one has come as an opportunity for the leadership in these particular countries to sit on the political roadmap. Because, as I said, the temperatures in this country was rising up. Many of these countries were soon to have elections. The one in Ethiopia was postponed already. The one in Malawi, luckily enough, is coming up. The one of Uganda is uncertain. The one of Burundi has gone ahead. So there was already political tension with many of these countries. Now the leadership is using this chance to muzzle all efforts to have change in these particular countries. And they are doing it very rudely.
I'm sorry, I got connected a little bit.
Are you with us, Vicent?
I'm with you.
First of all, let me first re-ID the program, and then, Vicent, you come up with your point. For those who are joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We're coming to you live from Washington. And tonight, we're discussing the politics involved in the COVID-19 pandemic. My panelists are Vicent Makori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. So, Vicent, you want to say something?
Well, I just wanted to say that if I had an opportunity to have, conversed with some of the leadership on the continent, I think this was an opportunity to really see why Africans need to focus less on the stupid politics of muzzling opposition, undermining each other, but rather to work together and to focus on the development of their countries, to look at how best we can build institutions that really serve everybody. Because what this proved, this particular pandemic has proved one thing, and we can review this 5 years from now, is that a time comes, and this was a great glimpse into that, where you cannot depend on the rest of the world, but you have to do things for yourself. And so this, I think, was a critical moment for all sides of the political aisle to sit together and say, look, here's a situation where none of us can jump on a plane and go anywhere. And all of us are in a house that is catching fire or is being threatened by a dry, you know, bush around us that is catching fire, we all need to come together and make sure we extinguish it so that we stay safe, and then figure out how to build a solid structure that will keep us safe not only now but for generations to come. So for those who see every opportunity as a political opportunity to clamp down on the opposition, in Burundi, as we saw, the more concern was about, you know, push through these elections, of course, which is okay. I mean, elections should happen whenever they're supposed to happen. But to make sure that you undermine the opposition so that you can ensure you stay on in power as a political party, it's so short-lived, because at the end of the day, if we do not focus, if the focus is not on the important things, the future of every country is very, very unstable. Because if we deal with another round of such a situation, if it hits your country hard, even you as a leader, you will die, or family members will die. We've seen some of our countries where they've tried to send their, I saw a West African country try to send their official to France, although we know that there's no known cure in any of these countries. We know that the First Lady of Burundi was sent to Nairobi. We're not saying there's anything wrong with that. But again, it shows you that this is a time to focus on fixing the countries, building the infrastructure, but also focusing on the more important thing rather than the stupid politics of destroying the opponent and holding on to power for just as long as you can.
I see. And gentlemen, as you know, politics goes with the economy. So yes. Given that most of these countries, actually not only Africa, the world over, the economic impact has been big. How do you see African countries recovering in this situation?
We'll go back to the point of Vincent, where he has said that if he was an African leader, he would have looked for inclusiveness. There is no doubt whatsoever that the African economies have been battered by the pandemic, whether you like it or not. There is no doubt whatsoever that for you to pull out each individual country from the effects of this one, you need an inclusive government. You need all leaders on board. So far, so good. If you look at the reaction, so far, so good, Kenya has reacted nicely. The Ghana has reacted nicely. When you look at the economic response of Kenya, you can see a well-organized government. You can see well-organized institutions which look at both the fiscal response and the monetary response, and all structures, they are all well-structured, looking at the economy of the country, like in South Africa and Kenya. For example, they look at the poor, they reduce the VAT, they reduce the taxes, they reduce for the big business. There are lots of flexibility in the economy, which is aimed at putting the money into the pockets of the poor people and also helping the economy at a sophisticated level. With that one, you can see something which is well thought through. But when you come to countries like Uganda and you see the response, you can see fashionness. You can see lack of consultation. There is no proper economic plan. And even on the continent as a whole, as we have seen, the impact is so great. You need almost to reset each individual economy. The pandemic has been anti-globalization. The pandemic has come with one clear message as far as the economies are concerned. The message is build national capacity. Think about yourself first. It is almost, the pandemic is almost preaching protectionism, that you have to build your local capacity first before you look at the external. Because when time comes, you will need to feed your people. So you look at your agriculture, invest in your agriculture. When time comes, you need your health. build your health. When time comes, you need employment, grow your industry, grow your manufacturing. So no countries have come up with all these policies. You can see that they're still haphazard. Why are they still haphazard? Because they have not been consulted. They need an inclusive approach to the economic crisis which is facing the continent. So we need a proper economic program coming up. Of course, South Africa is well organized. Of course, South Africa is coming out with a clear program. But still, there is still need for consultation. Even in South Africa, Malema is not yet happy with what the consultation done, with some of the things which have been done. You can see that as a continent, as this central state, the leadership need to be inclusive because what we are facing a national crisis, not political party crisis. We need everybody on board to come up with the policies which will pick this country. Either with that, or we are going to go in for a big problem.
If there's a second, Douglas, I wanted to add something to that.
Yes. Go ahead.
The storm is just ending, if you look at it clearly. The devastation is going to be seen in the assessment after. And one of the things we know is that there are so many livelihoods that have been destroyed. We are really not seeing the clear picture. All those people have been doing small jobs, small businesses on the roadside, in some marketplaces, or some small-time business, some subsidiary industries, for example, to the tourism industry. We're talking about tourism. Once the tourists didn't come in, we know that there's so many associated industries that were seriously affected. And some of those will not recover soon enough. So what that tells the continent is that it is critical to think now to start thinking ahead on how do you create, as Mohola said, the capacity. Because the most powerful countries in this world have been seriously affected. So they're not focusing on that. We cannot tomorrow wake up and start knocking on their doors and say, give us money, give us help. Because they themselves are going to be focused on fixing their own economy, the recovery process. And you notice, like, during all this situation, nobody was thinking about an African country. China may have fought for their own interests. But Europeans and others were fighting to survive. The Americans are fighting to survive and to recover and to rebuild. Where do we go to? The IMF might have given us a little bit of that, a little bit of that. But at the end of the day, it's a big lesson that we need to really focus on building our economies, building the capacity, so that we don't have to rely on begging. Because a time comes where those fellows are minding their own businesses. They have no time to give you any handouts or to give you even any loans. No, they have their own problems.
I see. Talking of giving you loans and begging, briefly, to both of you, beginning with Suleiman, do you find it interesting that as soon as the pandemic hit, some African countries were already calling for debt forgiveness and trying to borrow more money immediately?
What is ironic, straight away they want debt relief. They want, at the same time, others are looking for assistance. They don't have a plan. There is no paradigm shift. How can you ask money? How can you ask for a debt relief when we are still corruption-ridden? We need help. In the 90s, they were given debt relief. They were starting to get relief and build economies. Did they build economies? How much are they allocating to health? They are put with their pants down, allocating less than 10% of the budget to health, allocating less than 10% to the economy. So even if they are given debt relief, even if IMF pours a lot of money as it is doing, it is giving them money. The U.S. also supports another multilateral organization to give them money. As long as the situation on the ground is still as it is, so long as the political system is still the same, so long as the political players are still the same with the same mindset of enriching themselves, of corruption, nothing is going to change. Instead, we are going in for a big show.
Go ahead.
Douglas, when you look at countries that we know, for example, if I may talk let me just make a reference to Kenya. Right now, the president is trying to fight corruption. Now, I don't know if he'll succeed. If you know how much money has been stolen that has enriched the political elite in that country, that money is enough to pay back what we owe and is enough to help resolve so many economic issues in the country. It is ridiculous. It is laughable that an African government would ask for debt relief and ask for more money when most of that money comes into the country and is pocketed by the political elite right from the top. And anybody who is well-connected, there are people who brag about being hustlers. I know people in Kenya who brag about how they have succeeded in being extremely wealthy and how they came from extreme poverty and now they're wealthy. And we know that they did not just do some honest business. They have pocketed money that belonged to the citizens, that money was supposed to build infrastructure, that was supposed to build schools. And today they're some of the wealthiest. How do you sleep through the night when you live in a country with millions of poor people, millions of very poor people, and you brag of being a very wealthy man, knowing that all the money you have, all the wealth you have, comes from the money that was supposed to belong to the citizens, that money, the money that was stolen from the citizens of a country. So I think I find some of the shameless people across the continent, especially when they can step forward and start asking for more money from the West. It's a shame.
And in a word, because we're out of time, why do you think the lenders keep lending?
That is the conspiracy with the international community, really. Even giving support. Mm-hmm. Because you are giving support to countries which have run down the economies, which have turned their country's economy into rudimentary economies. If countries like Burundi, Malawi, Uganda, Rwanda, they are surviving this pandemic economically. They are only surviving because economies have become rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
People are only they are only surviving from hand to mouth.
Yes.
So the unestablished economy like that one of South Africa, that one of Kenya, there is no way you can dodge. It is being affected with diminished demand from the international community, with the diminished economy, contracted economy from the international community. Being a part of the global world,
mm-hmm.
you are automatically affected. If you are not affected, then you are a rudimentary economy. Otherwise, if you wonder why this international community should continue giving money, whereas they know that these economies are run down.
I see. So, Vincent, 10 seconds.
Yeah, again, because one of the things that happens is that some of that money actually comes back to the West.
I see.
We know so many African leaders who have property here in the United States, who have property in London. So anyway, for them, they have nothing to lose. Some of that money gets invested back in those Western countries.
I see. Unfortunately, we're out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the coronavirus pandemic is changing the socio-economic realities on the continent. Join me, Linor Mudu, as I host a special edition of Straight Talk Africa and explore the impact of the coronavirus.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Larry London. You are invited to join me every day for Border Crossings. This is unprecedented times that we're all faced with. Everybody's at home. Everybody's sitting and wondering what the future will hold once this COVID-19 virus is under control on a worldwide level. Well, in the meantime, I'm here to help you forget about the problems going on outside your door. Tune in for an hour of music every day by request on Border Crossings.